The Book Programme, presented by Hannah Murray.
Joining us on the line now is Nelson Aspen. He's an award-winning journalist, author, and co-host of the popular Titanic Talk, and appears regularly on GB News as a political commentator. His new historical fantasy, Kindred Spirits, A Titanic Tale, was inspired by his own metaphysical connections to a lost Titanic passenger. He celebrated the publication as part of the 113th anniversary commemoration during Titanic Weekend aboard the world-famous RMS Queen Mary in Long Beach, California. The book spans time between the night in 1912 when Titanic met her tragic fate and the hedonistic party scene of modern Manhattan. It's a story of love and redemption denied to gay men by the constraints of the Edwardian world into which they were born. Welcome to the book show, Nelson.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be with you.
Oh, it's great to have you with us. So tell me about your connection to the Titanic and why you have such an affinity with the story and the time period.
I certainly do. And a full disclosure, we're speaking from my home in New York City. So if you hear the odd siren going by, it's not an emergency for me. It's just an emergency from the streets of New York somewhere.
Good stuff.
But my connection is to a first-class passenger who perished aboard the Titanic, and his name was Milton Long. And I am not prone to metaphysical beliefs, paranormal beliefs, but after 61 years of recurring dreams, déjà vu, coincidence, little mishaps and accidents and coincidence, I mean, it was undeniable that there was some kind of connection between Milton and myself. And it did take the course of a lifetime to figure out what exactly that connection was. I've always had a fascination with the Titanic, which is not uncommon. It is strangely the most romanticized disaster in recorded history. The fact that it has become such a beacon for romantics, for conspiracy theorists, for even children. Children, even nowadays in 2025, the youngest kids have a cognizance of what Titanic is and a fascination with it. So it is a strangely unique genre. And what I find is interesting is that the gay aspect of Titanic's passengers had never been explored. And with Milton, in everything I was able to find out about his 29 years on Earth, was that even for all of his privilege, he was very sad. He was very lost. He came from a wealthy family as an only child, but he never graduated from the universities he attended, both Harvard and Columbia. He was buried with his parents, although they had five more plots in the cemetery, probably assuming that he would marry and have children. Why was this single, well-to-do young man traveling alone on the Titanic after a winter holiday in San Moritz? He was running from something or to something, perhaps. What we do know about Milton is that on the very last night of Titanic's voyage, he met another young man, another first-class passenger, and they became instantly so close and attracted to each other that they literally went down with the ship together. Ironically, his friend, a young man named Jack Thayer, survived the sinking and went on to marry, have four children, but sadly committed suicide at the age of 50 in a very horrific way. I think it's another case of, as I've learned in my Titanic studies, that no one had a happy ending out of Titanic. Even surviving the disaster did not merit a happy ending. There was survivor's guilt. There was the post-traumatic stress of the incident itself. So I feel like whatever connection I have to Milton, he has been a footnote in Titanic history. And I wanted to say his name 113 years later. And perhaps in a way, I'm picking up the baton for taking advantage of the opportunities he couldn't, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And yes, you can imagine the survivor's guilt and things of, it's not like if you survive that, you'd be celebrating going, "Woohoo, that was close," you know, as if it was just something really trivial that you managed to escape from. I mean,
especially for a man, for the men who survived, there was the added guilt of, "Oh, did you take the place in a boat for a woman or child?" So it really was very complicated. And we are so, I guess we could say, inoculated to scenes of catastrophe in today's modern world, whether it's on the news or in movies or television. But in 1912, to take the beacon of technology, I mean, the Titanic represented man's dominance over nature, over machines. I mean, it was really something extraordinary. And for it to be snuffed out so quickly on its maiden voyage was a very traumatic global event. It changed the world. I don't think it's a coincidence that after the sinking in 1912, it marked the end of the Edwardian era. World War I came a short time afterwards. It really changed. It was an event that I don't know, it destroyed some kind of innocence that the world had.
Mm. Oh, definitely. And you also had a strange encounter with the oceanographer, Dr. Robert Ballard. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, I'd been piecing together all these different clues about my connection to Milton, whether that be a past life or maybe just some sort of kindred spirit relationship. And people had been mistakenly calling me Milton. I still go into a Starbucks and order a latte and they'll go, "Milton, your coffee's ready." it happens all the time. And Milton's not a very common name in the 20th and 21st centuries anymore. But in 1985, oceanographer Robert Ballard discovered the long-lost wreck of Titanic. It had been lying at the bottom of the ocean so deep for so many decades, no one had any idea really where it was. Plus the fact that it had split in two meant that it was separated, that the ship, the wreck site was separated, and all the debris that had spilled out of the broken ship was the clue for Dr. Ballard. He began to see the debris field, and that's what led him ultimately to the wreck. So in 1985, it was world news that he had discovered the long-lost Titanic, and he was on the front cover of every magazine, the front page of every newspaper, and I was a young 22, 23-year-old man living in New York City, but I knew I had to get in touch with Dr. Ballard. I had to be a part of this recovery mission or this exploration. And okay, keep in mind, 1985, we didn't have the internet. I got out the phone book. I started doing my stalking of Dr. Ballard. And I tracked him down to the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute in Massachusetts. And here I am, this cocky little kid. And I called him up, and the operator says, "Who's calling, please?" I said, "I'd like to speak to Dr. Ballard. My name is Nelson Aspen." And she put me on hold. And I don't know, 30 seconds later, the fact that he took my call at all as a miracle. But he picked up the call and he said, "Hello, Milton?" And that's when I knew something's amiss here. And to Dr. Ballard's credit, he listened to my spiel about, you know, "I think I've got this connection and I really want to do anything to be involved in your expedition." And he sent me, it arrived in my mailbox 2 or 3 days later, I got an application for the Oceanographic Institute. And that's when it sort of, the reality hit me. I was like, you know what? This is not to be my destiny. I'm not going to be an oceanographer. I'm a performer. I'm a writer. I'm not going to do that. But it really spoke volumes about his integrity. Of course, now in 2025, we Titaniacs are everywhere. Not so much in 1985.
Oh, I love that. I've never heard that before. Titaniacs. That's brilliant.
Well, I sort of coined that as we sort of began our Titanic Talk podcast. We started out by just interviewing fans and actors from the movies. But everybody, it seems, Hannah, has a connection to Titanic, or at least an interest. It's a great common denominator, maybe after Coca-Cola and French fries. I don't know. There's something about Titanic. And The podcast took a life of its own, and I've always contended, because I have a long history in celebrity interviews, but I've always said fan is just short for fanatic. So with Titanic fans, I just call them Titaniacs.
Brilliant. I love it. Really, really good. And you're doing a bit of a tour. I mentioned that you've done the anniversary weekend aboard the RMS Queen Mary, but you're also going to some really cool places. You're going to Belfast, the original shipyard where the Titanic was designed. I mean, really exciting.
It is exciting. It did kick off on the Titanic anniversary weekend in April. I was doing the Titanic weekend on the Queen Mary in Long Beach, as you mentioned. From there, I went to Beverly Hills, back to New York City, a Titanic exhibition in Boston. London is next at the Brasserie Zadel. And then, yes, as you said, Belfast. And what's special about Belfast is it's not only the birthplace of Titanic, but I had been there in the early aughts. And it was a rather sad city, but there wasn't much there besides the shipyard. And they have, since my last visit, created the world-class, phenomenal Titanic Museum, Titanic Hotel. I mean, the whole city has been rejuvenated because of the global interest in Titanic. So while I'll be going there to celebrate my book, I hope it will be the beginning of many more journeys, and I've become... Go figure. I mean, if this doesn't prove do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life. But I have become a sought-after commentator about all things Titanic. And I'm working the cruise circuit. I got to go on the maiden voyage of Cunard's new Queen Anne ship. But people just, even on a cruise ship, people want to talk about Titanic.
That's amazing, isn't it? So tell us about this book then, Kindred Spirits, A Titanic Tale. What can people expect from it?
Well, it's definitely adult. I don't know if you remember the great writer Jackie Collins, but she was Jackie was an early mentor of mine, and she always said, whatever you write, put some sex in there, because that's what people, even if they're prudish about it or don't like it, they'll want to read it. And she taught me so much. Also about selling a book. She's like, what good is writing a book if you don't sell it? You have to be unafraid to stock the shelves, check the shelves, handle the money, transactions. You know, you must get the book into the hands of the people. So I originally had wanted to tell my personal story connected to Milton. However, my publisher had a different idea. I had already written my memoirs, of which Milton, strangely enough, was not a part. And my publisher said, because your memoirs occurred in the 80s and 90s and aughts, rather than tell another personal story, is there a way you can tell the same story, but instead of it being you through the 70s, 80s, and 90s, can you fictionalize it that way and make it somebody else contemporary? So I did. And so hence historical fantasy. It is my story of my connection and how I found out I was connected to Milton. But it's also quite historically accurate in that we find out a lot about the available stories we have about Milton, about his connection to his friend Jack Thayer, other passengers. Dr. Ballard is in there. And the Titanic community of today, with whom I am so close as a result of the podcast and all these appearances, they turn up in there. I mean, you can go to a Titanic convention and you meet fans, authors, historians from all over the world, of all ages, of all backgrounds, and they're united by this one common thread. So in my book, it is the first gay Titanic novel. Shocking to believe, but yeah, there were gay people in 1912, maybe even on the Titanic. And oh, a nod to Jackie Collins. Guess what? People had sex on the Titanic. It's just the way the world works. So in my story, Milton perishes as he did on board the Titanic as it sunk, and I know exactly how he perished, but when he is pulled under the black icy waters, he next opens his eyes and it's 2025 and he's in a gay nightclub in New York City in his new body, mine. And it becomes an odd couple story. Yes. So Milton and his new host, Nelson, although I've renamed him Preston in the book, this odd couple of a repressed Edwardian gentleman and an extroverted, flamboyant modern man must coexist. And it is an odd couple situation, but they both help each other. They both learn lessons from each other as they explore what happened to Milton's unrequited love. So it's kind of a buddy story and an odd couple story, two souls in one body. And I really enjoyed it and felt so close to both of us by the end of it that I hated to say goodbye. And people are like, oh, well, you know, will there be a sequel? And I'm like, no, Milton's at peace and I've learned my lessons. And I don't think there will be a sequel, although I'm in talks about perhaps a movie version. So we'll see.
Oh, amazing. That would be so fun. I can imagine, I can see how you would have really enjoyed writing this and putting it together, mixed with all the facts and information that you've collected over the years, but also throwing some fun and what ifs in there as well.
Absolutely. And you get to take these sort of iconic figures from Titanic history, like the Captain Smith, the Bruce Ismay, the Thomas Andrews, the unthinkable Molly Brown, and you give them cameo roles in the 1912 portions, but you can also revisit them in their modern counterparts and put them in as what you might call Easter eggs throughout the story. So just to illustrate that times change, but not always people change.
Yeah. And I have to ask you about your celebrity interviews, because you've done so many. I noticed on your website earlier a lovely photograph of you and Jennifer Aniston. I was like, oh, when was that?
That was, I love that people love that picture. It's a testament to how popular and enduring her appeal is.
Yeah.
But Jennifer and I knew each other from our teenage years when I was working on an American soap opera called Search for Tomorrow. And her dad was one of the stars of the show and a great gentleman and an early mentor to me in many ways as a young performer. And over the years, as I morphed into a 30-year morning television career, I did 10 years for the UK and 20 years for Australia as their entertainment correspondent while I was living in Hollywood and interviewing just about everybody. And the picture you're referencing with Jennifer, I'd interviewed her a zillion times. She trusted me because of my history with her father. And, you know, I don't call that nepotism. I call that trust. Mm-hmm. And why not work with the people that you trust the most, especially if you're a star of her magnitude? And after 5 nominations, I finally won the International Media Award for Journalism in 2020. Thank goodness it was right before COVID, so I was able to get the award in person.
Yes.
And Jen was there and presented it to me, and we took the photo together, and that was very special. And then the world shut down, so that was a treat. But yes, I've interviewed, a zillion stars, and you know what? I don't think any of them thrill me as much as Dr. Ballard's phone call from the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute.
Oh, amazing. Great stories. Well, if people want to get a copy of Kindred Spirits, A Titanic Tale, it's available on our website, tre.radio, and it's by Nelson Aspen, who we've been chatting with today. Nelson, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, I'm delighted. It was my pleasure, and I hope everybody enjoys the story.